Okay, it is a Monday. It is 2:30. That means it is time for Connor Boyack, LibertasUtah.org, I believe is the right one. Connor, are you there?
Yes, indeedy. How are you?
I'm doing good. That's the right URL, correct?
It is indeed.
Okay.
Yep.
So, what do you want to talk about today?
I want to talk about something that actually made the news a few days ago. Many of your listeners may recall, I'm sure you do, where President Obama was giving a speech, a graduation speech, at some college, I don't remember which. And among the rest of what he said in the address, he said he was warning people about not rejecting government on the basis that it might lead to tyranny. I think you've got this queued up. I want to play a little clip because this is the basis for what I want to talk about today. On how wrong he was.
So it's so ironic, too, given this whole IRS targeting at the Tea Party, too.
Exactly.
I mean, it's just ironic. Okay, I'll play it. Hold on.
We, the people, chose to do these things together because we know this country cannot accomplish great things if we pursue nothing greater than our own individual ambition. Unfortunately, you've grown up hearing voices that incessantly warn of government as nothing more than some separate, sinister entity that's at the root of all our problems. Some of these same voices also do their best to gum up the works. They'll warn that tyranny is always lurking just around the corner. You should reject these voices, because what they suggest is that our brave and creative and unique experiment in self-rule is somehow just a sham with which we can't be trusted. We have never been a people who place all of our faith in government to solve our problems. We shouldn't want to. But we don't think the government is the source of all our problems either, because we understand that this democracy is ours. And as citizens, we understand that it's not about what America can do for us. It's about what can be done by us together, through the hard and frustrating but absolutely necessary work of self-government. And class of 2013, you have to be involved in that process.
I mean, that's just unbelievable. It's like watching those ads from the 50s where the doctors are telling you cigarettes are good for you. It's so, like, and again, the fact that nobody's connecting what he's saying, how outrageous this is, and the title of his autobiography, Audacity of Hope. This is so audacious, it's just mind-boggling.
And I'm reminded of the very famous quote by George Santayana, where he says something to the effect of, those who cannot remember history are condemned to repeat it.
Yeah.
Those who don't learn from the past
are doomed,
are condemned,
right,
to repeat it, right? And so the problem with remembering the past, remembering history, is that you first have to learn it. You first have to be exposed to this information. Now, on a historical basis, we need to remember the circumstances in which this nation was created, that Obama was saying that this brave and bold experiment, creative experiment, self-rule, well, that was born out of the idea of decentralizing power for the very purpose of minimizing the ability of any one or any few people to take away or significantly restrict the life, liberty, and property of any given individual.
Yeah, the whole experiment that he's saying we're taking part of was born out of suspicion of tyranny.
That's exactly right. In fact, it was Thomas Jefferson, in a letter to a friend, he said that the natural progress of things is for liberty to yield and government to gain ground. And so it was a bold, it was a creative, brave experiment, but it was the exact opposite of what President Obama was claiming. It was, in fact, an experiment, as you suggest, born out of a significant mistrust of government. And therefore, for him to suggest that these graduates or that Americans in general should reject the voices warning of tyranny is the attempt by a tyrant or would-be tyrant to say, don't mind me, right? Don't pay attention to what I'm doing, because if you were to be smart enough, you would see that those warnings actually apply to what I'm doing, what we're doing in government.
Now,
of course,
hold on just a second. We got a caller.
Sure.
Can I bring him in real quick?
Yeah, absolutely.
I just want to bring him in and let them say their piece, too. Caller, you're on the air with Connor and I. What's up?
I know I'm going to get the boot from here on out. But
all right,
you know,
Arv, make it quick, dude.
When he did that speech on May 5th, it was one day late from May 4th, which in 1970 in Ohio, State.
Yeah,
or,
Kent State.
No, Kent State.
Yep.
43 years earlier, Ford in Ohio, and this individual we call our president, which I have no respect for him whatsoever, was talking about how, you know, people get sucked into a thing. And, you know, we can't let ourselves get sucked into this thing.
That's a very good point. Hey, I appreciate the call, Harv. I'm going to get back to it. I appreciate it. That's a good point because, you know, it's totally bookended by tyranny. The statement that he makes about disregard tyranny is bookended by what he was talking about. Harv is talking about Kent State Massacre's anniversary when innocent civilians were killed by the state and this Tea Party targeting.
And I think it's important that, you know, I want to take it actually in the direction that you and Harv are talking about, but it's important to also throw in a point of contrast that he says, you know, you'll hear voices that incessantly warn of government as nothing more than some separate sinister entity. There's a significant point of contrast between government in general and the state. Right, the state is not just any form of government. You have government in churches, in PTA.
Corporate governance.
Corporations, you know. Anytime that there's a group wielding power together, joining together in association, you're going to have some form of governance. Government is not the problem. It is the state. The state is a separate, often sinister entity. And so for the person leading the state, leading the federal government here, it's quite disingenuous. But I think you're exactly right. There are significant bookends. You know, and whether you want to tie it to a specific date, I mean, I'm sure we can find a date in every 365 days of the calendar where something significant happened. But what I want to talk about today is that these tyrannical things, in fact, these conspiratorial things, are real. And that's not to suggest that every cockamamie conspiracy that you find online is true. Far from it, right? There's all sorts of theories and random stuff out there that you can go down the rabbit hole and try and focus on. What I want to talk about is the reality of conspiracy, that there are things hiding in plain sight, that you can go to Wikipedia, that you can get some very reputable books and newspaper reports and all sorts of stuff that are presenting this information. The problem, like George Santayana said, is that we're not remembering the past. We're not remembering that these things are a very frequent and almost inherent part of the government to conspire, to impose tyranny. We are so disconnected from the history that we don't apply it the present and the future. And so my concern, as we look forward to which direction the government should be going in, as we look forward in our own efforts to try and reform that path, we need to be informed by the past. We need to recognize that there are elements within the government, within the state, that are conspiratorial, that are trying to employ the power of the state to kill people, to harm people, to jail innocent people. This is the reality that we face. And to ignore it, to unjustly minimize it, or to, as Obama was trying to do, completely discard it and paint it as fringe cuckoos, I think we are going to cut our legs out from underneath us if we don't give this significant attention and realize that these are the types of people that we're fighting against.
Yeah, no, I think it's important because, and that's one of the themes of this show. You know, I have a couple things that I like to talk about on this show, and one of them is that demarcation between conspiracy theory and conspiracy evidence. I mean, you can't throw the baby out with the bathwater on this stuff. I'm not interested in Roswell. I'm not interested in that stuff, you know, because that's like, whatever, dude. But the fact is that there are bad people in high places. I'm not saying all of them. I'm not saying all the government is bad. I'm just saying there are bad people there, and you're so naive to think that that kind of stuff doesn't happen.
And we need to recognize that those within government especially who try and bring up the crazy conspiracy theories, such as you mentioned, as an attempt to discard them all, there's an agenda there that we need to expose. We need to recognize that some conspiracies are real.
Right. All right, guys. The Boyack Review, we're in the middle of it. 801-254-5855. Give us a call. All right, we're back. Jake Shader Radio Show. Got Connor Boyack with us from Libertas Institute, libertasutah.org. Connor, are you still there?
I am.
Okay, so we're talking about legit conspiracy, the stuff that really goes down, or in the parlance of the people of your faith, secret combinations.
Yeah, you know, and I'm very glad that you brought up the most recent case that's prime evidence of exactly what you're talking about, the fact that elements within the IRS have been, or perhaps still are, selectively targeting Tea Party, anti-tax, anti-big government groups for unbalanced enforcement of policies, unbalanced audits. They're targeting these groups more so than just at random or what have you. And this is conspiracy, right? I think we need to kind of reclaim the word. In fact, when I wrote Latter-day Liberty a couple years ago, there was a prominent individual who reviewed my book before it came out, and he suggested not using the word libertarian. His concern was that that word had become so misinterpreted, misconstrued by people that they would immediately think that I was advocating for, you know, prostitutes and cocaine on every 7-Eleven, on every, you know, street corner.
And, yeah, the typical smear stuff.
And his suggestion was to just create a new word, create a new label. You know, just make up your own word and fight for that and popularize that. And I instead doubled down, I kept it as it was, and I kind of reinforced that chapter, and I titled the chapter Reclaiming the Word Liberty or Libertarianism.
Yep.
And I think that's what we need to do with conspiracy. We need to reclaim it from that fringe element that has so tainted it that people, you know, just kind of recoil in fear at any type of conversation that uses that word. And we do ourselves a disservice when we recoil from the word, let alone the substance of the word. Because then you have an example like the IRS and its selective audit. That is conspiracy. You go to something I just saw a couple days ago, how Congress rolled back its insider trading law. For those who don't remember, 60 Minutes did a big expose November of 2011, about a year and a half ago. Huge expose on insider trading within Congress, where these people have insider knowledge that no one else has by virtue of their position, and they were using that to invest in companies or bet against them. And we're walking away with significant sums of money. So, of course, this expose happens. There's a public outcry. Congress passed the Stock Act, overwhelming support in Congress, and it made the same insider trading laws apply to everyone else, finally applied on Congress as well, rather than exempting themselves. And now, you know, we're outside of an election year. Things are more quieter. And then it was, I think, about this was mid-April, so just about a month ago, in the Senate, they passed a law on Thursday that exempted, it kind of took away a big portion of that exemption. On Friday afternoon, just a day later, the House passed it with unanimous consent, no debate, no discussion. They circumvented their three-day rule to read a bill before holding a vote, and then Obama signed it, I think, a couple days later on Tuesday. And so here you have Congress once again reinstituting the exemption for Congress the insider trading laws by which you and I, if we have inside access information, can't make a profit because that's a form of fraud to be doing that. Now all of a sudden Congress is once again exempting itself. This is conspiracy. This is using the law, using power, using influence to profit, to gain at other people's expense.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny, and I like this concept because you could see it works successfully if you commit to it, right? Because, I mean, I think the most obvious one, at least in my brain, is think of all the rap music, right? The N-word used to be something that was to control somebody or to put them in their place. And now, in that world, that N-word is power. Mm. You know, you have white kids trying to call each other that now. I mean, how ridiculous. That's a power of reclaiming a word. You find it in the gay movement. You find it all this kind of stuff where you can reclaim a term and own it.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to fight for it. That's why, you know, you like these people calling themselves libertarian, like Glenn Beck or whoever. I'm like, yeah, man, you can call yourself 10 feet tall. It doesn't change the fact that you're 5'8".
And the ironic thing, ironic isn't the right word. The amazing thing with this is that once you open your eyes, once you kind of are willing to accept that this stuff happens, and even that it happens often, you find all sorts of examples, one conspiracy after another.
Yeah.
The LIBOR scandal was
yes.
a perfect representation of what's going on.
Perhaps right? the biggest financial scandal of all in all of history when you think of the number of individuals that have been scammed.
Yeah, and the staggering sums of money. I mean, we're talking, I think, you know, in the hundreds of trillions of dollars over time, where you had one analyst saying that I think it was since 1991 came out that this has been happening. In the Financial Times, July 27, 2012, a former trader published an article which stated that LIBOR manipulation had been common since at least 1991. Now, for those who don't know what LIBOR is, that stands for the London Interbank Offered Rate. It's the average interest rate estimated by the leading banks in London and worldwide.
Yeah, it sets credit cards rates. It sets if you bought a car, if you bought a house, if you bought anything and had to pay rent on that money, you paid interest on that money, you were scammed. Mm-hmm. That's huge.
It's significantly huge. And so then you get the Rolling Stone. They came out with an article a couple weeks ago, a great article, just gone viral on social media the past couple weeks, published April 25th.
Matt Taibbi, right?
Uh-huh, yep. Exactly. It's called, and anyone can go Google this and find it easily. Type in Rolling Stone, and then Everything is Rigged, the biggest price-fixing scandal ever. And as he says, the Illuminati were amateurs. The second huge financial scandal of the year reveals the real international conspiracy. There's no price that big banks can fix. And he, you know, gives a shout-out to LIBOR, but he says that was bad enough, but now it may have a twin brother. Word has leaked out that the London-based firm ICAP, the world's largest broker of interest rate swaps, is being investigated. So you have another, you have LIBOR version 2.
Yep.
You have another example of the very thing that's been warned about, the very thing that's been completely open, the very thing, it's not some conspiracy theory, it's not relegated to the dark recesses of the internet where you get all these crazy people just, you know, saying whatever they think is happening. This is open. It's for anyone to see. This stuff is happening. These powerful, significantly wealthy individuals are using their positions, using their authority, using their access to be able to control, to steal, to theft. This is huge. And it's a conspiracy. It's another example of this stuff happening.
There is not a better word for it. It is a conspiracy, and we got to be able to own that term. But, you know, we run into problems because we don't defend it. Somebody like, and I don't mean to vilify him because I think he does a lot of good. But somebody like Alex Jones, they just get a little too whacked out about it and make it look bad. And it's like, we can't be afraid of that, being like, yeah, he's a little over the top. But you know what? He brings up some good points sometimes, too. And I'm glad he's there, even though I don't agree with everything he says.
Absolutely. And I think another person like that, who I think when you say that, is Jesse Ventura.
Yes.
Tons of great stuff. He had a show called Conspiracy Theory where they go on site and investigate some of these places and things going on. He has a book, I have it here in my library, which I recommend. It's called 63 Documents the Government Doesn't Want You to Read.
But guess what? People will label him as a kook, but he's actually going and firsthand investigating. He actually has a better grasp on the facts because he's doing it and seeing with his own eyes, reading the documents himself, than somebody who's getting their information from the echo chamber of Fox and CNN and MSNBC talking heads.
Yeah, you know, and the book itself is fascinating. I mean, in here he provides all sorts of documents. Many of them I was familiar with. Some of them I wasn't. But source documentation, whether it's been declassified and it's decades old so it's not sexy enough to make the news, or through FOIA or WikiLeaks or what have you, these documents have come out. But these are primary source documents. This is, again, stuff that's open. It's not Jesse Ventura and his crackpot theory.
Right, this isn't Rents.com. These are real FOIA documents.
Yeah, you can look and see what the government is doing. I want to mention a couple as prime examples of this fact that conspiracy is open, it's happening.
Okay,
and
when you're done, I want to bring in a caller. We've got somebody holding here patiently.
I want to reiterate why I'm talking about this. I'm talking about this because we need to learn and remember that this stuff is in our past. Government has done it in the past. It's easily verifiable. It's open. It's in the record. So the question is, if government has done it in the past, would it not make sense to assume, would it not be safe to assume, that government is doing it now, and that government will do it in the future? I'll share a couple examples. Let's take the caller first, and then we can get in.
Okay, hold on. Caller, you're on the air. Thanks for holding. What's your name?
Hi, Connor. Chris again. Hey, I just want to remind you gentlemen that the Founding Fathers were conspiratorialists. Do you know
there
that?
There you go.
Well,
perfect point. They used to meet in the Masonic lodges and have little secret meetings.
Well, I mean, I don't know about that aspect of it. You're probably accurate there. But just read the Declaration of Independence. After listing all the grievances that the colonists had, what did Thomas Jefferson say about King George III? He says this: all of these, what did he refer to the grievances at? These usurpations evince a design to reduce these colonies to absolute tyranny. Okay, what does evince a design mean in modern parlance?
Yeah, it's conspiracy.
It constitutes a conspiracy. Just read the Declaration of Independence.
I appreciate the call, Chris. Good point.
Yeah, no problem.
And I think something to qualify that, I think if you look at most definitions, most accepted, you know, in the popular dictionaries of the word conspire, there's an element of evil in there, right? You're not conspiring to do something good. conspire means that you're getting together to do something, you know, that's illegal or unlawful or violent or evil. So, you know, I sometimes in jest say that I conspire for liberty because I'm having all these backroom discussions with legislators and stuff to try and get good things done. So, you know, perhaps a softer or more broad definition of the term can include just meeting secretly to do things. And in that case, the founders would apply. I don't think the founders were conspiring to do anything evil. So under a strict definition of it, then perhaps it wouldn't apply. But back to
it depends on the context. Certainly, they were conspiracy theorists and evil to King George's interests.
Sure. Yeah, on that basis that they thought that King George was conspiring against them. Absolutely. So there's two examples before we hit up the end of the show that I want to talk about that I think are prime examples. They're popularly known, though perhaps not as well as they should be. But there's all sorts of primary source documentation. These aren't theories. These are repeatable facts that you can investigate and go Google and find these primary source documents on your own. The first one is the 1953 Iranian coup d'etat, under which the U.S. government instigated a coup against the democratically elected leader in Iran.
Yeah, this is like crazy because it was the CIA, and here we are supposed to be, according to the neoconservative talking points, spreading, making the world safe for democracy, and we totally undermined it.
Absolutely. You know, and the United States government conspired to overthrow a democratically elected leader in Iran and install a Western-friendly puppet who allowed the oil to flow to America and England and elsewhere, brutally reigned in Iran for years until then there was, of course, the 1979 student protests and everything that has flowed from that, including the current interventions and saber-rattling in Iran as well. All of this can be tied back to the 1953 Iranian coup d'etat. The U.S. government conspired to overthrow a democratically elected leader of another country. That is conspiracy. Our government was responsible. This is easily verifiable.
Yep, fact.
So they say, well, isolated incident, right? You've got the, you know, maybe the decades ago, our government's changed, we've become more modernized. Well, okay, let's, you know, fast forward a little bit to the Cold War. And you've got the Operation Northwoods. Right.
Yep.
Go look it up on Wikipedia. All sorts of primary source documentation you can find declassified.
About Cuba.
Now it was in the context of Cuba, and the Joint Chiefs of Staff signed off on this proposal under which false flag actions would be conducted in Florida and elsewhere in the United States, in which the United States government, would shoot and kill its own people and try and point it on Castro and those in Cuba to incite enough popular support here in America to then invade and occupy and change, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. This was a government proposal, you can go read it for yourself, that the government was going to kill Americans and blame it on someone else for political reasons or a political advantage to incite support for a war. Operation Northwoods, Google it, you can find it. It's this is what's crazy, is that this is conspiracy. This isn't something that's a theory, this is something that's fact. And the question, I think, remains, if this stuff happened in the past, why could it not happen in the present? Now, this is very significant, right? This is the highest level of government. Of course, now with Operation Northwoods, interestingly enough, it was John F. Kennedy who rejected it, who shut it down. And yet the plan had been stamped and approved by so many people going up the chain of command to make it to the Joint Chiefs of Staff, one of the highest echelons of military leadership in the United States government. And it took JFK to shut it down.
Yeah, and we all know what happened to him.
And so, yes, there's conspiracies at the highest level of government, but let's take it down a notch here to Utah. You know, there's conspiracies all the time, and that's not to say people are dying or there's plans to kill people or anything as salacious as that. But when I walk around the legislature, I see lobbyists hobnobbing with legislators all the time, yep, trying to get their bill that gets them $1 million here or whatever. That is conspiracy. These lobbyists meeting behind the scenes, trying to get meetings, trying to win favor, curry favor, and get their pet projects pushed through. Now, to the extent that what they're promoting is wrong and unjust taxation and coercion against individuals and illegitimate use of government authority, then I would call that conspiracy. And so you have this happening on a frequent basis. You have people colluding and trying to use the arm of the state to impose what they want, their own pet projects, their own programs in government, their own subsidies and payments and things. This happens on a frequent basis. Now, whether it's the large-scale things like an Operation Northwoods or a coup d'etat in Iran, or the smaller scale stuff where people are just trying to gain enough support, rally enough support to get their own preferred programs and policies pushed through, conspiracy is rampant. And it doesn't take a crazy, you know, drug-induced theorist to claim on the internet that this is happening. This is something that any professional academic can take a casual review of history and see happening. We need to remember the past so we don't repeat it.
Yeah, I mean, Martin Luther King's family sued the U.S. government and won that the U.S. government conspired to kill him. This is a fact. It's crazy. Connor, I appreciate it, my friend.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, see you next week.